The title of today's sermon is Desire Determines Direction. When you look back over the last year and you think of all the things that you did and you consider all the things that you could have done, doesn't it make you want to tell Jesus, this year I promise to do more for you? What have we really committed to God anyway? Have you committed your family? Have you committed your marriage? Have you committed your time, your talent, your finances? Have you committed your abilities to Him? Now, some of you may say, well, Pastor, I really don't have any abilities. I can't really sing. I can't preach. I can't build things. I don't witness very well. I can't seem to do much of anything the Lord needs done. You may say, I don't have any abilities that the Lord needs. Friends, I'm here to tell you this morning that there is one ability that you have and God wants. And that ability is the one that He desires most of all His children. And that is your availability. Can you make yourself available to God? Won't you please stand with me in honor of God's word as we read what the Apostle Paul wrote to the Philippians. We'll be reading Philippians chapter 3, verses 7 through 11. But whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them garbage, that I may gain Christ and be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith. I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of His resurrection and participation in His sufferings, becoming like Him in His death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. You may be seated. I have noticed, and you have noticed, I'm sure, that people do what they really want to do. People are always going to do what they want to do. And I believe the sum total of a person's life is the choices that they have made according to their desires. Because desire always determines direction. And I believe that what I am right now is part of what I am going to be later. Now, I don't expect to wake up one day and find myself significantly different from what I was when I went to bed the night before. But the desires of my heart today determine what I will become in the future. Desire determines our direction. What is the desire of your heart today? You know, you can tell a person's desire by their behavior. You can tell what a person really wants by what they do. Let me tell you a story about a boy named Robbie. You remember when jams were in style? Jams, those long, ugly shorts. They came down about to the kneecap, and that was a big thing. Back in the 80s, jams were in style about the same time that knee socks were in style. And so that was back in the 80s. So Robbie would wear his jams and his knee socks. Well, there was about 2 inches between the top of the socks and the bottom of the shorts. And that made for the funniest little tan lines you ever saw. Can you imagine a 2-inch ring around the leg of a little 10-year-old boy? Then he decided he wanted a low-maintenance haircut so he wouldn't have to mess with his hair all summer. So he got a flat top like what Bob Simonton used to have all the time. So he got this 10-year-old little boy, got the ugliest shorts on you ever saw, knee socks on and a crew cut. He was cute, all right. His father likes to tell how he was very economical with his time. He didn't want to waste any time in the morning losing sleep or getting dressed for school. So he would literally get dressed for school the night before he went to bed. And he would actually lay on top of the bed so he wouldn't have to get up in the morning and make it. That way he could sleep just a little longer. And he would get up in the morning, and he'd grab a little bit of that butch wax and slick his hair back, and he's ready for school. But something happened near the end of the 8th grade. Suddenly, there was no more getting dressed at night. He began to get up early in the morning and get dressed and spend a little time doing that. There were no more jams and no more knee socks. He was now wearing khaki pants and a nice shirt. No more flat top. Robbie was letting his hair grow out, and he's even beginning to style it as it grew. I mean, this kid went from slob of the hour to Preppy of the Day in just a couple months. What was it that happened that caused this miraculous change in his life? Why did he change so much of his behavior and his appearance and everything? You know what happened. Somewhere around the age of 14, Rob, had discovered the American woman. He began to realize that girls were more than other people that had long hair and cried a lot. And there was something about this one particular girl that he wanted to impress. And so he changed the way he dressed. He changed his appearance. Rob went on a diet and he began running and working out with weights. He even took a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger and cut off the head and put his picture on the top of it, put it on his mirror so he could see it every day because that's what he wanted to be. He desired to have this young lady in his life, and he was willing to change whatever he had to change to make that happen. I'm telling you that whatever you desire will direct everything about you. Your one passion, your one overriding desire will affect how you look, how you walk, how you talk, your attitude, and even what you do. Anybody know somebody who wants to be rich? Their whole life is built around getting rich, isn't it? Some of them are workaholics. Some of them have to read the Wall Street Journal or they'll go to the internet first thing in the morning so they can check the stock prices because they wake up thinking about money. They're constantly trying to think of ways to make another dollar or they're looking for some tax shelter so they can keep the dollars that they've made. They're always thinking, how can I get more money? For some people, their driving passion is pleasure and sex and lust. For some people, their driving passion is sports. They're always checking the sports pages. They can tell you who won or who lost every game last week. They can even name the starting lineup and everyone on the bench for UK. For the last 4 years, their whole life is caught up in sports. But the Apostle Paul says, there is only the one thing. Only one thing that is worthy of all of our praise. There is only one thing that is really the worthy occupation of life. There's only one worthy objective. And he had discovered in a marvelous way, and he shares it in this verse when he says, I want to know Christ. With everything that's within me, he says, I've got to know this Jesus. It's interesting that when you read the Bible, if you'll do a little studying, you will find that it had been some 30 years since Paul had met Jesus on the Damascus Road. For 30 years, Paul had been learning about Jesus, following Jesus, teaching and preaching about Jesus. And in Philippians 1:21, he says, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. He is everything about my life. It's not just this part-time thing. It's not a Sunday morning, Wednesday night thing. It's not just an occasional thing. It's not even about my morning devotions. But everything in my life is wrapped up in, caught up in, this Christ, this Jesus. And not just a historical event of living, teaching, dying, being raised from the dead. But the apostle says, for me, my life equals Jesus. That's all I'm about. And 30 years after having met Jesus, he comes back and says, I want to know him. I want to know Jesus. It's not just enough to say I know about him. I want to know him. That was the passion of Paul's life. I want to talk to you today about three levels of knowing God. And as I go through these three levels, I want you to try to find yourself. Then ask yourself, is that where I really want to be? Is that where I want to be in my life? What are my desires? When I'm dead and buried, what will my friends say? What will my family say? But most importantly, what will God say as I stand before Him in all of His glory? Let's look at the three levels of relationship with God. They all start with an R. There's religion, relationship, and I think I'll make the last one be a surprise. Religion and relationship are the first two. What is religion? Religion is centered around rules. It's centered around all the do's and the don'ts. I know you all grew up in that. You can do this, but don't do that, don't do that. I grew up in a church that was mostly don'ts. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. It's more formal. It's more standardized. Religion is more predictable. It's more, well, I have this set of rules, and I have God's expectations, and as long as I live up to God's expectations, well, then I'll be okay. Really? Religion is lived out following rules. In other words, doing what I need to do to keep God off my back. That's religion. That's what religion is. Religion is doing what I need to do to stay out of trouble. So when I live a life at the level of religion, it is based on my performance. It is based on me. You see, I can measure how close I am to God by how many good things I do and how many bad things I don't do. I can point to all the things that I'm supposed to be doing and all the things that I'm not supposed to be doing. And since I'm doing the do's and not doing the don'ts, I can say that according to my religion, I'm okay. So my relationship with God becomes sort of like my relationship with the state highway patrol. That's how a religious person kind of views God. Sort of like I'm on the highway of life. I'm on the mountain parkway of my destiny. So, okay, God, I'm going to drive the speed limit so you won't pull me over and you won't give me a ticket. So you won't take my license. And if I go a little over the speed limit, won't you just look the other way? So my relationship with God is, don't watch too close because I might sin a little bit today. That's my relationship with God. God, I'm going to drive the speed limit. My license are okay. That's a picture of religion, if that's all you got. Well, and that's what the Apostle Paul would tell you. He would say that I was doing everything that I was supposed to do. He'll say, I was circumcised on the eighth day after my birth. I was born in the tribe of Benjamin. I was called a Pharisee of Pharisees. I kept all the laws to the letter. You see, the Pharisees were really into religion. And religion was it. And so what I do in terms of religion is I go to church because that's a religious thing to do. All these religious things that I do, I go to church, I pay my money, I pray, I even read my Bible. I do what I'm supposed to do. I even serve on a committee or two and I stay faithful to my spouse. And I just want to tell you that sadly, I feel that the vast majority of people who consider themselves to be Christians live at the level of religion. Good base point, but you don't want to stay there. They're good people. They're wonderful people. Good husbands and good wives. I know in the church we sometimes hear of pastors that go bad and they're unfaithful to their wives. But I'm telling you that for every pastor that goes bad, there are hundreds that stay true to their wives and their families and to church and to God. And so there is something to be said about religion. There's something to be said about duty. Now, I'm not putting religion down. All religion is not bad. It is a level of relating to God. It is that relationship that the Israelites had. They followed the Ten Commandments because that's all they had. Then they got some more laws. And more laws and more laws. Religion became tough for them. But Moses found something better. Moses got into the second level of relating to God, and that is relationship. Relationship is more than along the lines of a friendship. It's more along the lines of buddies. Or, you know, when I have a relationship with someone, that's someone I can have lunch with. That's somebody I can be friends with. Somebody I can share with. Somebody I can hang out with. Friendship. And so the theme song for relationship would be, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." I'm here to tell you that I was raised in the church and I spent most of my life having a religious relationship with God. I mean, I tried to do what was right. I went to church 3 or 4 times a week. I put money in the offering plate. I sang when I was asked. I joined a youth group. I handed out tracts. I carried my Bible to school. I read my Bible when nobody was even looking. I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't smoke. Didn't chew. Didn't date the girls that do. I was pretty much a straight arrow. mostly. But I mostly had this highway relationship with God, a highway patrol relationship with God. So when God first called me to the ministry, I acknowledged the call. But at the same time, I put my foot on the gas and began to run from God. You see, I wasn't willing to move up to that next level with God. I wanted to be religious. I wanted to be saved. But I was really not ready for that next level, to be friends with the Creator of the universe. I felt unworthy. And I didn't realize it was Christ that made me worthy, but I felt so unworthy. Then in 1997, I felt that pull again. So when I got the chance to sing lead for Paid in Full, I thought that's what God wanted me to do. Because I always wanted to be a singer. Never really wanted to be a preacher. So after about four or five practices, we were on the road singing. And in 1998, we had 98 concerts. But something happened to me in August of 1988. When I realized that this Jesus I had heard about all my life, that my mother and my father taught me about, and I heard A.M. Wilson preach about, and I heard the Sunday school teacher teach about, this Jesus wanted to have a relationship with me. And that he was real. I mean, really real. That he wasn't just a concept. And I went from trying to be related to God in terms of the sacrifice that I would make and all this stuff and do all the great stuff for him to, hey, Jesus, let's be friends. Let's be real friends. There's some of you here today that Jesus is desperate for you to move out of that level of religion with all those cut and dried rules to the level of friendship with the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. I am convinced that he wants you to move from, well, I go to church, to me and Jesus, man. It's me and Jesus. He wants you to move from doing the do's and not doing the don'ts to walking hand in hand with him. You know the real tragedy about Adam and Eve? You know the real tragedy about that? Sure, they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden for sin. That was bad enough. But the real tragedy for Adam and Eve was that before they were evicted, they were able to walk with God. When they sinned, they were kicked out of the garden and they could no longer walk and talk with God in the cool of the day. They lost that friendship and fellowship with God. That was the tragedy that happened in the Garden of Eden. But Jesus died to remove that barrier of sin. So once again, you and I could walk and talk with the living God and have fellowship and friendship with God and be reunited with him. That's what the cross was all about. It reversed the curse of the garden. And now we can know him. We can be friends with him. And once again, we can walk and talk with the Creator in our lives. Just like Peter. Now remember, Peter had denied Jesus three times just before the crucifixion and the resurrection. This is a little after that. But on that morning on the shore, Jesus looks at Peter and says to Peter, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Of course I do." And then Jesus says again, "Peter, do you love me?" "Sure I do." You may be thinking, well, what's that all about? You know, do you love me? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. How many times have I got to tell you? Yes. Well, if you read it in the Greek, it's different. You see, we only have one word for love. There's more than that in the Greek. If you read it in the Greek, you will understand that when Jesus says, "Do you love me?" he says the word agape. And agape means with this boundless love, this total love. Do you love me with complete love? And Peter comes back and says, well, he doesn't say agape. Peter says, "Yes, I phileas you." Phileas means I love you like a brother. It's like Jesus saying, "Peter, do you love me with all your heart?" And Peter comes back saying, "Love you like a brother, man." Jesus was not looking for Peter to come back and say, "Yes, sir, man, I love you. You're like a brother to me. We've been through thick and thin. Hey, do you remember the blind guy that you touched in his eyes and he jumped up and down and almost ripped your robe off? Do you remember all that? Hey, do you remember the night, Jesus, that you were walking out on the water and we were so scared? Man, you scared us to death. We were so scared that when I called out to you and asked if I could walk on the water with you, and you said yes, and so I did, and then I started to sink. You remember all that, Jesus? Man, I love you like a brother. Jesus said, do you agape me? Do you really, really love me? Have you gone from religion to the next level? Have you gone from friendship to the next level? Remember, the first level is religion. The second level is relationship. And the third level is, I don't know. Do I have time to tell you about the third level this morning? Maybe we ought to wait till next week. No, I think I'll tell you now. The third level is, well, it's kind of hard for me to say because I'm a guy, you know. And guys aren't typically good at that, but here goes. The third level is, well, romance. From religion or doing the do's and not doing the don'ts to relationship of, yeah, God, I know God, I met God, to romance. Do you have romance with Jesus? Now that goes way past let's have lunch. That goes way past, yay, he's my friend, long past me and Jesus. We hang out, yeah, we met, to romance. What is romance? You know what romance is. Well, maybe you need a reminder. Some of you are looking a little stunned when I said romance. What in the world is romance? Well, I can kind of describe it by using my relationship with my wife. Now, I'm not one to kiss and tell, but I do need to tell you a little bit to help you out. Maybe we need a little illustration. Back in 1974, I was in the Army and I was stationed at Fort Knox. I was the 8th Battalion Chaplain's Assistant, and I met my wife, Diane, while I was doing my duty. You see, Diane was the 8th Battalion Civilian Secretary. She wasn't in the military, she was civil service. And every day I had to go to the battalion headquarters to pick up any mail or distribution or any messages that were sent to the chaplain or to me, because that's where our distribution box was. Now, at first, we had a pretty formal relationship. I would come in and say, hey, where's my stuff? And she would say, it's in the box. But as time went by, we became a little more friendly. Sometimes when there was nothing in the box, she would make up messages to put in the box. And she knew that I knew they were a joke. But it gave us a chance to laugh and to get to know each other a little. We eventually got to be pretty good friends, and she even thought of setting me up on a date with her sister. Maybe because she was older than me. Although somehow I find that is no longer the case. I don't know how that works. I aged more than she did, I guess. But she never did set me up with Mandy for whatever reason. And after I had known her for about a year, or just over a year, I decided to ask her out. From the first date on, all I could think of was her. I made special efforts to make sure that I could stop by her office for something. I made up reasons to go by. When I went to Florida over the Christmas break, I seemed to spend more time on the phone talking to her than I did with my family. I can tell you that our first date was December the 9th, 1975. We saw Gone with the Wind. We ate at Ponderosa. We were engaged at 1 a.m. on February the 15th, 1976. We were married on July the 10th, 1976. Romance. Romance. We've been married for what, 38 years now? 37 and a half. I went from a formal hello to we're friends to romance. And that's what the apostle said. I want to know Christ. This is the level of intimacy that I feel too few people reach. This might be a little embarrassing to you, but if you were to read it in the Hebrew, and I really can't pronounce this word, but it's pretty easy, it looks easy. The Hebrew word know comes from the Hebrew word yada. Yada, Y-A-D-A, is a word talking about the deepest level of non-sexual intimacy that two human beings can have. Yada. And 30 years after meeting Christ, the Apostle Paul is saying, with all my heart, I knew religion and it didn't satisfy me. I met Jesus on the road to Damascus and we began to have a relationship. But you know what? This relationship has grown to where I think about Jesus all the time. I wake up thinking about him. I wonder what I can do to make him happy today. And then I go all day thinking about him. Listen to me. When it's a romance, you don't go around talking about how you're making a sacrifice for the person that you're in love with, do you? No, you just want to discover how you can be more of what he wants you to be. Do you know that Jesus is crazy about you? Do you know that Jesus is absolutely wild about you? Do you know that he longs for you? Do you know that he sings for you? Do you know that he is waiting for you to love him and not to be religious or not to be just friends? He wants you to love him. Sometimes I'm afraid that we teach too much the do's and the don'ts. Yes, you need to keep the laws, but why do you keep them? It is because you love him. I don't keep myself from committing adultery because of some law, no. It's because I love my wife and I'm going to be true to her for the rest of my life. It's a love thing. You see, God doesn't care if you're the Church of God or you're the Baptist Church or a Nazarene or even if you're a Catholic Church. He just cares if you love Jesus with all your heart. The lawyer came to Jesus and asked, "What is the greatest commandment?" And Jesus said, "I'll tell you what the greatest commandment is. It's easy. It's this one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength." You got to love God. Do you love God with a passion? Is he your burning desire? Is he your first thought when you wake up in the morning? Do you say, "Good morning, God," or you say, "Oh, good God, it's morning already"? Is he your last thought when you go to sleep? Throughout the day, do you catch yourself just daydreaming about heaven? Have you written his name when you're just doodling? Boy, if you do that, you know. If you're just doodling on your desk and you write Jesus, then you know. He loves you today. Some of you may be holding back things in your life. Jesus will come up and give you a hug and you'll just push him away. He just wants to love you. There could be healing for some of you here today if you would just let God love you. Is there anybody here today that is hungry for God? You just want to go deeper in your relationship with God. You're tired of all this bargaining and all this exchanging and all this struggling and wrestling to make God happy. Would you just like to put all that down today? You can. There is no better time than now. Won't you come and pray as we sing? Our closing hymn is number 226. Oh, how I love Jesus. Oh, how I love Jesus. Number 226. Won't you stand as we sing?